This is Tim, and welcome back to Leading with Sense. In today's episode, we're going to cover the different types of debt that our soldiers face on a day-to-day basis, you know, including credit card debt, payday loans, and car debt. And we're going to do this by diving back into the interview with Captain Brian Brantley and myself. Again, Brian Brantley is now an active duty officer, but before his time in the military, he was a certified financial planner. And he, through his time in the military and his time as a financial planner, he's seen how, you know, debt and bad debt can really affect someone's financial well-being. So again, that was over a 2-hour interview, and today's episode's about 30 minutes. And in my last episode, I covered money marching order number 3, which is debt assault and BRS match. So in order to understand the different kinds of debt, you know, we dive a little deeper here to cover them and hopefully help educate people on the pitfalls of these debts. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. And without further ado, I'll go to the interview. So probably the biggest detriment to someone's financial progress, or maybe stunting their financial progress, is debt. And a lot of, you know, as I was talking about earlier, our new Joes coming in, our new officers, you know, the marketplace is, you know, a fish tank with sharks in it, right? Every time you step out in the marketplace, there's marketing, there's advertisement to get you into all these products. You know, if you go outside any military base, there are different businesses out there that are just waiting for the soldiers to come out the gate so they could take their money. You know, there's car dealerships, there's pawn shops, there's title pawns, all that. So we're going to dive a little deeper into the debt to avoid. Again, I'm pretty debt avoidance model overall. So, but we're going to talk about the really bad stuff and things you should avoid. So, Brian, if you want to take over, and we can talk about each of these and how they're
cool. Bad. Yeah, I completely agree with you. What I was taught, and I love this idea, is that money is like water. It's alive. It's either flowing towards you or it's flowing away from you. And, you know, we've talked about all of these ways to invest to make your money work for you. Well, when you have debt, you are the investment and you are working for somebody else and you are paying them a penalty for you not having enough money to do what you wanted to do in the first place. So if you imagine that you're in a boat, the debt are all the little holes in the boat. And, or if you have a bucket, better yet, let's do that. If you have a bucket full of water, you know, and all the little holes in there, yeah, you can try to out earn it. You can try to put more water in there than what's coming out. But until you've plugged those holes, then it's going to be really hard for you to build long-term wealth. So I completely agree. And debt's easy to get, especially as a new soldier. Like you said, I remember too, going to my first duty station as a specialist and having like the Navy Federal Credit Union, you know, USAA, the local credit unions all there in like my welcome day with information on car loans, information on credit cards, information on the VA home loan purchase. And, you know, these aren't all bad things to begin with. It's not evil corporations trying to take advantage of you, but it kind of is. If you do it wrong and you don't guard yourself, it can get that way. And I look back on my own experience. I look back on my friends and my soldiers, you know, as I was a leader and I was trying to educate them on their own expenses. The things that I see that really get the people the most, the first is credit cards. I have not seen any other debt do more damage to people's lives and marriages and financial futures than credit cards. It's the easiest thing to get out of hand. I tell my kids, you know, I educate my kids. It's like credit cards is like fire. You can do great things with fire. You know, keep yourself warm. You can cook some good food, but you can also burn yourself. You can burn the house down. And most people, it's like giving fire to a toddler. You don't know what you're getting. You don't really understand it. You don't understand the ramifications, and you give your 2-year-old a torch and expect good things to happen. It's probably not the case, not without a lot of education. For this instance, you know, I always like to say credit cards are like claymores. They do a really good job if used correctly, but unless you've been trained and you're pointing it towards the enemy, if you accidentally point at you, yeah, it's not going to work so well. So if you want to be conservative, if you want to avoid that risk completely, working without a credit card is the safest way to go about it. If you decide you want to be that person with a torch, I recommend that you do so with a very deliberate, measured approach, meaning you have a budget and you've proven to yourself that you can work off of a cash budget and that you never spend more than you have. And you're going to feel the desire to do it. You know, if you have a credit card that has a $25,000 limit, it's like, oh, cool. And I'm getting points. I love points, man. You can fly for free. But you're not flying for free if you're paying interest, and the interest on credit cards are so high. So unless you know for sure you can stay within a budget and you're never going to pay interest, it's going to be facing towards you instead of the enemy. And I know, Tim, you love credit cards less than you love Claymores, you know?
Yeah, I am not a big credit card fan at all. Partially because I had such a bad experience when I was younger because I didn't know about them. And I faced the Claymore directly in my face. And next thing you know, I had over like $8,000 of debt because I bought furniture for my house. I moved on a credit card. And next thing you know, I've got $8,000 of debt and like nothing to show for it. And most of the things I bought at this time, again, I started off my military career not knowing that much about money and the military and how everything worked. And that's why I started this podcast, because I want people to be more educated than I was when I entered active duty. So my thing is, staying away from credit cards just makes you be more intentional. Where a credit card, again, it's amoral, where in itself, yeah, it's not evil, but it can be used for evil things, just like fire, just like a brick. Where if you can kind of establish your financial habits without the credit cards, that's probably the safest. And then if you want to add one later, like, I'm not going to get mad about it. But if I meet with you in my financial coaching session and you're carrying $4,000, $5,000 over month to month on revolving debt, I'm going to tell you, get rid of it. You know,
right. Any benefit you think you're getting from a credit card, if you're carrying a balance, you're not really getting it. The math does not work in your favor. You know, these big buildings that the banks own weren't built off of people paying their credit cards off every month. So yeah, completely agree. And the reason that's kind of the most damaging is the easiest to get away from you. Like you said, you weren't out like, you know, getting resorts, you know, in the Caribbean, or, you know, staying, you know, paying off everybody's bar tabs to make friends. Like, you were doing stuff that felt like responsible purchases. You were buying furniture for your house. You were probably, you know, buying food or whatever it happened to be. Everything. You didn't feel like you were being extravagant.
Sure.
But $8,000 early on in your career, that's a lot of money that you don't want to just have, you know, spilled out of the bucket through the holes. And that can be a nasty hole. The other one that I've seen, and if you like follow any of these, you know, Facebook groups about the Army, is, you know, the Joe that comes in says, "Hey, Sarge, I just got a new car. Check out my Camaro, check out my Mustang, check out my Ford Raptor," whatever it happens to be. And it's the same one that they've been seeing on the predatory car lot. And we see these memes, we see the things on like Army WTF, where it's, "Hey, Sarge, just got this new car, check it out." And yeah, it's that sweet car. And then, you know, Sergeant's like, "Where'd you get it? Please tell me it's not that lot right outside the gate." "Yeah, it was right outside the gate. They didn't even check my credit. It was awesome." And you have a 29% APR on a car that's more than your annual income that the guy told you totally can afford. And now you're spending 80% of your paycheck on a car that you can't afford to put gas in, on a depreciating asset that you probably overpaid for. So it's already worth like way less than what you bought it. And then over the next 5 years, you're losing 80% of your paycheck to this car that's going to depreciate. And guess what? Statistics say that you're not going to keep that vehicle because it's going to get repoed. And guess what happens when it gets repoed? They give it a bath, and they put it back on the lot, and the next private buys it. And it gets to the point with these guys that the repo guys that come out, they see the car, they already know where they're taking it because they've done it two or three or four times. And every single one of these guys that run the lot near a military base is a retired sergeant major, first sergeant, allegedly. That's what they'll tell you, whether it's true or not. But, you know, they'll tell you they got the best interest and this is what you need. Those places are not where you want to go. If you need a car, Yeah, I would recommend that you don't get any kind of loan to begin with. People that are far richer than me, who I aspire to be in their position, you know, after I've had enough time and have demonstrated enough wisdom to build up to their level, say that car payments are the scourge of the middle class. And if you look at an average car payment of $400, $500 a month, if you were putting that in a mutual fund in your IRA, the amount of money that you're going to end up having at the end of your time in the military is going to be phenomenal. But instead, what everyone wants to do and what's become normal is to go and get a car payment on a car you can afford to make the payment each month. I say that because you can't afford it, because you can't buy it with cash. So you get a car payment. So now you're taking out a loan to put against something that you know is going to be worth less in 5 years. I would say, if you came up to me, Tim, and said, hey, I got this great idea. The market's hot right now. I'm going to take out a personal loan for 5%. And I'm going to put it in a mutual fund because you said that the average of that mutual fund is 14%. I'm going to make 7% off my money. I'd say, hold on, Tim. That sounds cool. There's a lot of math there, a lot of variables. It might not work out in your favor. And I would say that's a really high risk move, man. There's some reward there, but it's pretty high risk. And you're already eating away into your gains because you're going to be paying that personal loan's interest. So then if you come and tell me, hey, I got this great idea, I'm going to take out a loan against an investment that I know is going to depreciate by almost half in the next 5 years. And I am going to spend a huge chunk of my paycheck towards it every single month. And at the end of the 5 years, I got this awesome plan where I go and I give it back to the place that sold it to me. And then I get an even better vehicle so that I can pay even more money to get this nicer thing that's going to depreciate equally as fast. I would say that's a terrible investment, Tim. Don't do that. You know, when it comes time to affording a vehicle, the best thing you can do is to buy something with cash. Because then, yes, it's still going to depreciate. You're not going to stop that. But you're paying for it in a way that you're not going to further the depreciation of your wallet because you're not paying the interest on something. Instead, you can pay cash, use the extra money that you'd have put towards a car payment into a mutual fund, your IRA, build some wealth. And then later on with that mutual fund, you know what? All your other debts are paid for. You've been really responsible with your money. You can pay cash for the car that you want. But, you know, for people who carry car payments their entire lives, they don't realize the opportunity costs of what they're missing. And, you know, lots of figures have been thrown out. I know you got a really good one, but for a lot of people, it's 7-figure differences at the end of their career.
Yeah, you know, it absolutely is. And you touched on something about, you know, a car depreciating within a 5-year period. I mean, everyone knows as soon as I drive the car off the lot, it goes down 10%, 20%. I mean, everyone knows that. Everyone talks about how you shouldn't buy a new car, but yet everyone drives a new car just because it's so easy to go out and get a car loan. Like I could go out today and probably be home in an hour in a $40,000 vehicle. Easy. But what the statistics say is that over a 5-year term, you know, when the car's brand new, it loses nearly half its value, you know, 40 or 50%. I recently was just curious and I looked up a brand new Jeep Cherokee just to see what the value was. And, you know, they go from anywhere from $31,000 to $40,000 depending on which one you get. I looked up one that's 2016 because this is the year 2021. I looked up one that was 5 years old and it was $16,000-$17,000 depending on your options. So, I mean, that's literally almost half. And, you know, people say like, well, I got 0% interest or I paid cash for my new car. And I, you know, that's still not a great move because you only get 0% on brand new cars. And if you pay cash for a brand new car, you're still losing that percentage 40 or 50% in the first 5 years, which by the way, right. like you mentioned, you're probably getting rid of that car around the 4 or 5 year period anyway.
Right. So, it's exactly what you said. If you're going to buy a brand new car, you need to recognize the depreciation and you have to be able to say over the next 5 years, I'm willing to lose 30 to 50% of this money. If you can say that and you can still achieve all your other financial goals, then maybe you're in a position where you can afford that. But I'm not in a position where I want to be able to lose that much money. And if you look at the depreciation from year 3 to year 8, it's way less than from year 1 to year 5. You know, so like if I'm going to go out tomorrow and buy a new vehicle, I'm going to go look for maybe at the newest, like a certified pre-owned that's, you know, in good condition. The car's really reliable. Buying it from something somewhere reputable, or I have someone that's smart on cars look at it for me. Make sure I'm not buying a lemon, but I'm going to buy something that somebody else has already paid the depreciation on. But even then, it's not an investment. I'm still going to lose some money, but I'm not going to lose nearly as much because I'm not going to have a car payment and I'm not going to lose that first 3 years of appreciation.
Exactly. So it's an investment in a sense that you need it to get around, but it's not going to make you any money, you know, unless it's some kind of classic crazy asset. But so you want to minimize your loss. Again, like Brian was talking about, buying 3 to 5 year old vehicles is a really smart financial move just because the depreciation has already happened and you're not going to lose as much money. So if I buy a car for, let's say I go out and buy a 3 year old car for $15,000 and I sell it 3 years from now, I'm probably going to be able to sell that car for close to what I paid for it, you know, $12,000 to $15,000, that range. So I'm not losing as much money. And then I can recoup a lot more out of that and invest it into my next vehicle. So that's
absolutely
going to, that's going to be our recommendation, to buy not a new car and not something old and broken that you're going to have to put so much money into, but kind of a sweet spot really of, you know, 3 to 6 years old, just depending on how much you want to spend and what car you want. So
what do you recommend as far as the amount of money that someone should spend on a car? Because I think that's another thing that I see, even people who are attempting to make responsible decisions, they're paying in cash. A lot of people end up buying too much car for their wallet, and that becomes detrimental to their wealth building later on.
Sure. Yeah. And I know there's some gurus out there that say, you know, half your annual income and stuff like that. But I like to break it down a little further just because I like to address like each vehicle, you know, if you're in a two vehicle household is I don't want any one of your vehicles to add up more than 3 months of your net pay. So if I bring home $5,000 a month or $3,000 a month, you know, that car should be between, you know, 12 and 15,000 depending on which one you are. So 3 months,
you're going to sit about 25% of your annual income. You're probably in a sweet spot for owning a depreciating value.
Exactly.
Or a depreciating asset. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's very smart.
And if you want a toy on top of that, if you want a motorcycle or something on top of that, that goes into that number. You know, it's not a separate number because that's just a toy. So if you want a toy, put it in that, you know, 25% of your annual income.
Yeah. If your toy has an engine, then it belongs in that pile of money.
Yep. So, you know, if you and your wife each have a car, you know, 25% into each. So, because what the
of half your combined annual income.
Yeah, because right. The half your annual income, you could own a Range Rover for $50,000 and still be within that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know,
yeah,
that may not be a responsible move. So I like to break it down a little bit further than the half your annual income. So
I've also found that like if you're paying cash for a car, you tend not to want to buy the most extravagant thing on the lot.
Sure. Because when you finance something, they just roll everything into loan and you're not feeling that. There's no friction there. So you're like, I'll take the car, I'll take the floor mats, I'll take the undercoating, I'll take the footprint gas pedal. And next thing you know, you have an extra $5,000 added to the car.
And, right. Which, hey, it's not a big deal because it's only $50 a month difference or $25 a month difference on your pay, on your payment. But I pull money out, oh, go ahead.
And you get a better deal too, right? Because I think you're about to say is when you pull money out, you feel the money and you go to pay it to someone and you want to give them as the least money that you can to get that vehicle back. Like we bought a 2015 Ford Escape and we bought off a army colonel and he was asking like $13,000 for it. I offered him 10, pulled out the cash on the spot. And he was like, okay, you know, that was it. That was
nice.
And we walked away with a nice car for $10,000. So
that's pretty awesome. Yeah. See, like, you know, I talked the short-term, long or midterm, long-term buckets of money. You know, I will put money in the midterm bucket, my mutual funds, and that will sometimes be, okay, we need a new vehicle or want a new vehicle. And I'm going to pull money out of there. But when every time I do that, I'm looking and I'm seeing like, all right, this money was working really hard. and now I'm going to move it over here. And I'm going to buy this thing that's going to get less. Like, it's painful, and I'm happy that it's painful. I want it to be painful because it limits me from going out and buying more car than one, I should, or two, that I feel is necessary. And it goes back, and I try to tell my kids this. It's the hardest thing. I tell myself this. I'd much rather be rich than look rich. And if you can kind of like ingrain that, like, am I building wealth or am I looking rich? Like, it's just one of those car things are the easiest way to try to flaunt riches that you don't have. And it makes you less wealthy in the process.
I call that financial stolen valor. And I'm going to make an episode on that sometime in the future. But yeah, financial stolen valor is when, you know, you look rich, but you know, big hat, no cattle, you know, as
big Texas hat, said. No cattle. Yeah.
So yeah, yep. Financial stolen
valor. I'll show no go.
So yeah, you know,
that's pretty awesome.
Cars are probably the most expensive thing we buy over and over and over again. They can really mess up our long-term financial. But you know, if you're surrounding yourself with people that buy new cars and, you know, just kind of the norm, which, you know, it was for me, a middle-class household, like, you know, new cars were the norm. And now I'm kind of seeing the long-term effects of that, you know, with my family and friends.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you can end up, it's easy too, when you're getting a car loan, to end up underwater on your note. And I did that once. I'll tell you the story.
Oh yeah. Digging that a little bit, cause I think that's something important that we didn't necessarily mention.
Cause you said something really awesome, that as soon as you drive it off the lot, it loses money and everybody's heard it, but you don't realize it until it happens. So let me tell you a story about Specialist Brantley. Specialist Brantley was at DLI in California, and it's beautiful weather and traffic's kind of bad, but not if you're on a motorcycle. Because if you're on a motorcycle, you can ride the middle lane, you skip all the traffic. It's beautiful, sunny California. And you know, I had a car that was paid off. But you know, I really wanted that motorcycle. So I went in, and I ended up, instead of taking money out of my savings, I was like, it's only going to be a $5,000 motorcycle. You know, I'll just make a really low payment. The interest isn't going to be that much, because I was doing a math problem, but I wasn't thinking long-term. So I went in, and I didn't negotiate as hard because I didn't have cash in my pocket. And I bought extended warranty. I put the jacket and the helmet on that because, hey, it's all there. I can just buy it as one package deal and safety first. And then I drove off the lot and drove it around for 3 months. I woke up one day to go to PT and my motorcycle wasn't there. I found out that it was stolen. So filed the police report, went through my insurance and realized that I was $2,800 under. Was the value of my car or my motorcycle because of this wonderful desire to get the thing without paying cash. So they gave me the cash. I still had that $2,800 remaining. I went back and said, hey guy, I got the warranty, right? I'm good. He's like, oh no, you should have bought gap insurance. I was like, that was that thing that cost an extra $500 that I said no to, right? He's like, yeah, that's why you should have done it. I was like, yeah, but it got stolen. It's like, no. He's just like, sorry, you should have paid more for the gap insurance. And at that point, I realized, I was like, no, I shouldn't have given $500 in case my motorcycle got stolen. I should have paid cash. If I had paid cash for that bike, then I would have gotten $200 more than what the bike was supposed to be. But I bought all these warranties that were a giant waste of money because I never used them. And I bought all this gear that now I couldn't turn around and resell. So I looked cool. I had a cool helmet with the Mohawk, and I had like the cool leather jacket with the built-in like pads that I could walk around with and think about the $2,800 that I had to then go pay off for nothing. And then never again did I want to be in a position where I would be under, because I saw it was a no money down. I didn't pay a dollar, man. I just walked in and I walked out looking cooler with a motorcycle, but I ended up paying a lot more in the long run. So
taxes, fees, all that on top of
taxes, fees, and warranties.
Really great way to get upside down in a vehicle. When it's coupled with the 10%, 20% depreciation in the first 2 years. So.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I had driven it for 6 months and realized I didn't want to take it with me, I wouldn't have been able to sell it because I still wouldn't have been able to pay it off. So I would have been stuck with this thing until I paid it off, and I would have lost money anyway. If I had walked in and I'd been paying cash, maybe I wouldn't have gotten that bike. I certainly wouldn't have dropped a grand and a half on warranties. And, you know, I would have paid cash for my gear, and I would have been in a much better financial situation, even though hardship struck. You know, I would at least broke even on my purchase after 3 months. But yeah, so, you know, when it's easy to get upside down, even if you're putting money towards it. So the more you can avoid taking out debt, creating holes in your wealth building vehicle, then you're going to thank yourself in the long run, even though you're not going to look as cool as the kid with the 29% APR Ford Raptor for while they have it. Tim, you know, you have a great way to avoid the next big trap, which is the predatory loans, the payday loans, which is right located. If you don't know, just go outside the main gate. I don't care what base you're at. Just go outside the main gate. Go past the strip club and the liquor store. It's like right next to the dealership. It's the payday loan place that is going to check your, you know, they're going to write you a check and you're going to get out of there with cash. Giant trap. It is not in rich areas of town. They only put it outside of military bases and the poor places because those are the only people that are going to be doing it. It's not an investment. It's not a great deal. Tim, how do I keep myself from having to make ends meet in an emergency situation?
Well, I would recommend first your emergency fund to...
That would be a great place to put it, yeah.
Yep. So MMO number two is your helmet emergency fund, which is your highest deductible capped at $2,000. And then an MMO number four, we're going to go back and then fund that for your 3-6 months of body armor. And then so what this is going to do is it's going to create insurance for yourself in case something happens. You don't have to rely on a loan or an easy, quote unquote, to get a payday loan. So,
yeah, because it feeds on people who are already making bad decisions with their money. A lot of that's a lack of education, lack of willpower, whatever it happens to be. But like no financially healthy person walks into that place and says, yes, I would like to spend 20% interest on a loan that I'm only going to have for a short period of time so that I can immediately lose money. People do it out of desperation. And, you know, it's the person that went and spent 80% of their income on a car, and they're going to take a loan out to pay that loan, to pay the car payment. And then that car payment is not going to cost 20% more than the last one. And people stack those things and you get out of control and you lose everything that you have. If you control your spending, if you follow the steps of the money marching orders, if you're smart with your money and you have an emergency fund, that's where I'm going to go for a loan. And this is zero interest loan from my savings account. And then I'm going to pay it back like I owe it money. Exactly. So yeah, if you can easily avoid payday lenders by having an emergency fund. And then another option, man, if you're a soldier and some people just get stuck, you know, you might be listening to this and you haven't been smart with your money and, you know, you're in that position where you feel like, hey, that's the only way out. You know, there are other things. The Army Emergency Relief Fund, is a great tool that a lot of soldiers don't know about, where you can go in and get a no interest loan from. Basically, it's a kind of a charitable soldier funded organization. I donate to it every year to help out soldiers in need. And that might be what bridges you between being fiscally desperate and irresponsible to give you the step that you need to start making right decisions while avoiding that predatory lender. So if you're stuck, if you're really, really stuck, not just uncomfortable, but like there's nowhere else to go, there are things like that. Talk to your sergeant, talk to your CO or whoever's above you, and they can help you out.
Yeah. So I think that brings up a good point too, is taking advantage of the resources that are there. Again, the Army doesn't do a good job. Military at large doesn't do a good job to even educate on what is already there. So
right.
Yeah, the AER fund is definitely a good benefit to get you out of the hole and get you by, you know, while you're working the steps or if, you know, you just have something pop up. And, you know, everything we talked about in these episodes is really, you know, focus on the active duty soldier. You know, we want that person not to be stressed out about their money. We want them to be making smart financial decisions. That way, overall, you know, the military can keep achieving its goal and keep readiness high and keep the families, you know, low stress, because, you know, mental health and suicide are something that are very close to financial well-being and financial to-do. So, just again, these are really, really important things to listen to and to heed the guidance that Brian and I are kind of presenting to you. And just to know that if you behave in such a way and you kind of, you know, you do heed this advice, you're going to stay away and create a lot less stressful situation than maybe otherwise.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a misconception that you need to have a massive income to become wealthy. And it's just not the case. You know, a lot of people don't think that you can become wealthy being in the military. And, you know, I'm here to tell you that even if you are enlisted throughout your entire career, if you don't become an officer or a warrant officer, like, I know some enlisted soldiers that I've served with who are retiring as millionaires and are way better off than the 05 and 06 who was retiring next to them, who spent all their money and was foolish and didn't follow these types of steps, and they retire with nothing but a pension. Like, you have the opportunity, especially if you're a younger listener, if you're new in the Army, you know, no matter if you're wearing a fuzzy, you know, or if you're a butter bar, like, you have the opportunity now to start making some significant, impactful decisions that can help you build wealth by investing into yourself, avoiding debt. And you can either exit the Army or retire eventually with wealth, true, true wealth and financial freedom.
Well, that's the interview. Thanks for tuning in and listening. As we review the episode real quick, the things to avoid, again, are consumer debt in the form of credit cards, car payments, and payday loans. When we pay cash for things and don't rely on debt to get us those things that we need, we're better off financially, and we're not paying more in interest and fees and putting ourselves in a bad situation where we are not able to accomplish our other financial goals. If you're just tuning in for this episode, go back and listen to the other episodes. Again, these are all kind of cumulative for the first 10 or so episodes. So we're going to cover things from emergency savings, debt avoidance, debt payoff, things like that. Go ahead and subscribe. Until next time, this is Tim signing off with Leading with Sense.